you want a view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it. Want to change the world? There's nothing to it. There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be.
It's allowing for the careers event that was taking place, which took out the Siren News team. I thought, what better way to celebrate the joys of happiness than pure imagination with Gene Wilder there, almost singing as the perfect warm-up act to a young lady who comes out of pure imagination, total fantasy and loveliness, etc. in San Diego. It's Annette. Andre, how are you, Annette?
After that, I'm very well, thank you.
There we are. It's marvellous stuff there. So, last week, of course, we were sharing the joys with Arthur Weingarten about the fabulous time he was bugged with the CIA, of course, and the FBI,
yes.
And all manner of scenarios on that basis. And now, who knows where you're going to take us on the latest audio missive from San Diego, but Annette, we are in your hands.
Okay, well, I couldn't possibly eat another bite. When I was growing up, "Your eyes are too big," was one of my mother's favorite cautions. Whether it was my wanting double portions of mashed potatoes or bragging about real or imagined accomplishments, it was sure to produce a major eye roll. Not anymore. In fact, the older I get, the less my eyes want. What's prompted this reflection was a recent article I read about Johnny Depp's financial woes. It seems that this Hollywood superstar, who's earned more than $650 million so far in a 30-year career, is heading down Queer Street according to his accountants. In a role reversal, Mr. Depp has accused the number crunchers of pirating his finances, and in return, their count is suing him for flagrant abuse of common sense. For a quick peek into Johnny's big eye syndrome, you need look no further than the village he bought on a whim near Saint-Tropez, France, or the chain of islands he's landlord to in the Bahamas, or the 14 homes he owns all over the map, or the $30,000 he plonks down each month to replenish his wine cellar, or the $3 million he shelled out to have his friend's ashes shot into the atmosphere from a custom-made cannon. All this and more might go to explain why Mr. Depp's bank account is leaching $2 million more a month than it's taking in. Of course, he's got plenty of company in having outsized oculars when it comes to feeding an inner demon that keeps demanding, "I want, I want, I want." Just 2 hours up the Pacific Coast Highway from my home is Los Angeles in the billionaire's enclave of Bel Air, a gated community of conspicuous consumption, with mansions built to convince that Henry VIII will emerge at any moment from the Tudor doorway, or a Martian invite you for a tipple in her spaceship replica. Two of the biggest and most expensive estates in America are vying to make Johnny Depp look like a Chelsea pensioner. For a nicely rounded sum of $250 million, currently the most expensive residence for sale in the country, you can stretch your ego in the 38,000-square-foot manse overlooking the peons squatting below in Beverly Hills. Among its must-have features is an 85-foot pool with a gigantic outdoor TV screen that rises at the flick of a whim to show a panoramic view of the surrounding area, if you aren't in the mood for a Jay-Z video. Hard of hearing? Oh, not to worry. The TV has 16 concert speakers, guaranteed to bring the neighbours over for more than a meet and greet. The builder hasn't forgotten that public transportation in LA is sketchy at best, so in the 12-car garage is $30 million worth of vintage autos that are yours with an X on the dotted line. Oh, and let's not forget the staff of seven that come with the drapes for 2 years, tips included. But maybe you're wise in not jumping the gun and whipping out the old checkbook. Just a mile away is another bed set for the discerning that's nearing completion. This one is three times the size of the also-ran, and at $500 million, sports a master bedroom advertised as having more square footage than a Manhattan townhouse. So, with these riches just a short jaunt up the coast, why am I no longer tempted to be, well, what the real estate agents call a looky-loo, someone who wastes their time by wanting to see how the 1% lives, with no intention of taking out a mortgage? I must confess, I did just that, well, now and then. But those days are gone, along with my big eyes. As I've moved from Australia to London, to Los Angeles, to New York, and now again back to Southern California, I've grown weary of packing and unpacking a lifetime of things, most of which have no relevance in my life now. As I've downsized my square footage, I've also honed what's important to me today. Like a sauce that needs reducing to reach its potential, I've traded my collecting things for a closer focus on what truly gives me pleasure, especially in these unsettled times. What was once not enough has now become too much. A case in point. I was having lunch with a friend in L.A. and turned down an invitation to a Sunday Malibu beach party at the home of a singing legend. I had been anticipating a quiet day reading and enjoying the art at the UCLA Sculpture Garden. She looked at me, shook her head in wonder. "Boy," she said, "are you going to enjoy being dead?" I'm still thinking about her prediction, and while I'm certainly in no rush to find out if she was right, I must confess, I can think of worse ways to spend eternity. Thank you. That's all.
Perfect. I mean, what can we actually say? I mean, I just sort of put a bid in £30 million. Seems like a snip, actually, for the automobiles. So definitely didn't work on that. Tessa Snott has joined us.
Hello.
Tessa, you heard some of the wonderful Annette's views there in terms of Johnny Depp and his... I mean, he's only hemorrhaging $2 million dollars a month, so that's not too bad. I mean, it's
no.
System there. But, I mean, Tessa, you're also shaking your head there in terms of, boy, are you going to enjoy being dead?
Yeah, I think that there's too much today in this culture, as you were saying earlier. It's like, I want, I must have this. And it's almost a case of, you know, when is it ever going to be enough? Is there, therefore, are you ever going to be satisfied? Are you just going to be an empty vessel?
Never.
I know. It goes on and on. You're right, yes.
I mean, we're just talking with Tessa this very afternoon, where, as opposed to actually heading off to an alumni event, she was one of two individuals
just
who decided to actually attend the Origins of Modern Britain seminar, as opposed to... It's a sacrifice there. Equaled, I think, the record we had once with one of your sessions, Natasha. That was 9 o'clock in the Joseph Banks laboratories, of course, but 9 a.m. But the point being, of course, consumerism. You buy stuff to make you feel better, and if you still feel a bit bad, buy more stuff. Yeah. It's the American dream, Annette, surely. You know,
It is. Well, it isn't just America, really. I mean, it's very big. It's just more in America.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you have it elsewhere, too. I used to have it a bit in England. Oh, I'm feeling a bit down today. It's not a very nice day. I think I'll go out shopping.
Retail therapy.
And you come back with something you really didn't want, you know.
Yeah, but still, never mind. That's how things go. Kaylee, I mean, as somebody who's... Mother is indeed America. Does she sort of, when you head back to the joys at Vermont?
Yes,
exactly. Head back to Vermont. Is it a case of, yes, let's go over there and buy everything, or does she say, let's be sensible?
It's let's be sensible. She's not into
Let's be sensible from that point of view. Martina, in Poland, I mean, this sense of rampant consumerism, just buying stuff and shelling out a whole range of things you bought. How many villages did you say that he'd actually purchased, Johnny Depp? A small sort of village?
He purchased one village.
One village.
Near Saint-Tropez.
Right, yeah.
But he also a chain of islands.
Yes.
In the Bahamas.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I can see a sort of move for that. It could be seen as an investment, really. You know, so, I mean, Martina...
Yes, but it doesn't seem to be an investment. No,
clearly. And from your own point of view, Martina, you think that this is a case of, you know, the world's gone mad?
I mean, this is crazy. My mum always said, you know, money doesn't give you happiness. But I was going to say that you pointed... I mean, speaking of money... like, people in Hollywood always, like, earn so much. And
well, not necessarily. Well, I know a lot of jobbing actors who'd actually still be actually waitressing in some sort of scenario, actually doing the whole thing.
That's true. But the ones who get there, they are... I mean, we never earned anything like that. And now it's obscene what they're earning.
Well, yeah,
I could have a Bahamas island if I'd earned that back then.
Compared to us, it seems so unfair that they have so much. And we don't necessarily... And there's always like stories of them spending money on like silly things or a dress bought for so many thousand pounds, where they could like be giving it away to charity or something. But surely they deserved that money, right? If they worked hard for it, surely they deserve the money they
have. Well, you hope they were. But yes, of course. I mean, one's not begrudging that at all. But I think, you know, I think you could do things. There are people starving. There are animals in agony, you know, and pain and being put away. And there are a lot of things. And there's art. I mean, if you want to spend your money, well, for me, it'd be art.
And that's not Mr. Garfunkel, just in case you're wondering. You know, it's actually sort of commenting on some musical scenario, which, of course, is art in its own way. Tessa, any thoughts from yourself? I mean, obviously, technically, Johnny Depp could actually buy the village of Glinton just outside Peterborough. Obviously,
well,
he could have.
It might be too small for him. But, no, I was going to say, there is a lot of celebrities that do help charities as well, but I think that kind of comes with the territory. I think they maybe feel they have to. I don't know whether it's always done out of the goodness of their hearts. I think sometimes it is, but it depends on the person. So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with you. I think that's right. You never can tell why people do something, but... Pardon me. The fact that they do it is really the main thing. And I think there are a lot, I think, who actually do it because they want to.
It's nice to see.
Because it's a good thing to do, not because, you know, they're going to be seen. Yeah. I think there are some who do that. And if you do it for that, I think it's not a good point to you.
It'll all work out splendidly in the end, I have no doubt.
It all works out in the end. The show must go on.
Exactly. And that's spluttering in San Diego. I'm spluttering here. It's a great and wonderful thing about you. Kaylee, any observations from yourself?
I was just going to say, do you think they have the pressure of it from, like, instant gratification of everything they want it now?
Or yesterday.
I think so. There is certain things about, you know, people. I think it's a terrible insecurity, frankly.
Did you ever, when you were doing the height of, obviously, Randall and Hopkirk deceased and the saint, etc., did you ever in that sort of say, no, unless you actually have a bowl of M&Ms and a Winnebago with a view and a certain size trailer, I just don't want to know? Did you ever have any riders?
What I said was, all of that, except I didn't say I didn't want to know at the end. And what I got was a tiny little trailer with no heater in it, stuck out in a graveyard, waiting for Kenny to appear.
Yeah. And exactly.
That was what we got.
And the option of actually being Roger Moore's most wonderful guest star and co-presenter with The Saint as well. It's all part and parcel of the rich tapestry of life. That's the important thing. And the important thing is, you're heading back to England in the near future, I gather, Annette.
I am, a couple more weeks, middle of March.
And where could people see you if they wish to actually check out Annette Andre in person in Britain?
Well, we've got, I put it up on Facebook, and I've got on the 18th of March, I'm in Birmingham for that one day at the, I think they call it the Comic Con, MCM or something, CMC or something. at the in Birmingham at the NEC. You know, the big thing there.
It's a very big place.
That's all day on that Saturday. And then the following week, on the 25th, I believe it is, there is in Westminster, in the Central Hall in Westminster, we've got a memorabilia show. Exactly. So I'll be there. And then in April, on the 22nd of April, I'm doing an interview with Sam Westerby in the Museum of Comedy.
It's just,
That's a live thing. You can buy tickets.
Exactly.
That's a live thing.
Let's just work our way through that. So, in order, first of all, MCM Birmingham Comic Con, Saturday the 18th of March, followed by the London Film Convention at Westminster Central Hall on the 25th of March.
That's right.
As you rightly say, if you've never been to these unique events, you've missed an opportunity to meet a chance to actually share the love of the golden age of British television, which is really wonderful. And on the 22nd of April, with Sam Westerby, the Museum of Comedy, a show called Annette André, Randall and Hopkirk, and Me.
Me.
Like, what is that? Exactly. Randall and Hopkirk and Me. Taking place between 7 and 8, 10 p.m. With a meet and greet between 8:15 and 8:45. Tickets, of course, available at museumofcomedy.com/ticketsolve.com. And is that the Museum of Comedy? Oh, is that the Museum of Comedy in London?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it's a wonderful place.
It's off Leicester Square.
To be precise, Annette, it's the Museum of Comedy, the Undercroft, St George's Church, Bloomsbury Way, London. Web address: museumofcomedy.ticketsolve.com for tickets. See what we did there? Seamlessly cross promoting one of our ace co-presenters in ways.
You know more than I do.
I'm just going to your Facebook page and finding those things out, which is very important for that side of things. We really should try and meet up during that time. Who knows whether we will? Who knows whether we won't? But the opportunity is always there. Tessa, last two questions for Annette André, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
Oh, yes, I have. Yes, I have. It's been good fun.
That's good. And will you be joining us again on the show soon?
Well, yes, but not while I'm in London. I can't
Ironic, isn't it, really? You see, she's going to be in London, very close, same time zone, everything else sorted out, but not for the 6 o'clock slot. Maybe we could do a morning.
I know. I'm going to be so busy apart from I've got quite a few things lined up, like the ones you just talked about, but there's also a few
family,
other things.
All sorts of other areas. The only message is we're going to have double rations of Arthur Weingarten. Double rations of Arthur Weingarten. And in the Annette André catchphrase, because I'm actually awarding you an official catchphrase now, Annette, remember, be kind to the animals.
Thank you.
Remember, be kind to the animals. This one's for Johnny Depp.
Right.
A round of applause for Annette André, please.
Yay!
I just can't get enough. set me free. And I just can't get enough. And I just can't get enough. You're like an angel.
You'd probably say every time you get hold of a copy of Starburst magazine. You just can't get enough, isn't that right, Ed Fortune?
Absolutely, sir, absolutely.
Splendid, that's what we like to know. Chance to actually blow one's nose whilst we actually do an intro as well. I obviously had to close the microphone down because you don't want to have a presenter blowing his nose on air. For God's sakes, there are certain standards here. Let's move on. MCM, Birmingham Comic Con, we were just talking about it with Annette Andre, gets a full banner headline on the Starburst site as well, the world's longest running magazine of cult entertainment, of course. We've just been speaking to Annette Andre in San Diego before she makes her way over here for all sorts of wonderful routines. In fact, I was sharing a photograph when she was in the studio a few years ago. All on Facebook and all sorts of other wonderful ways. But, Ed, I forwarded a little missive about the future of science fiction across the globes, with specific reference to China and various other factors. Would you like to summarise the article that I actually sent you, and then you can actually go into complete contrary mode and say, that's rubbish, that is absolute rubbish.
It basically makes the argument, and it's quite an old argument, that you need good quality hard science fiction to encourage good quality hard science. And soft science fiction, Star Wars, for example, Battle Beyond Stars, kind of fun, is kind of counterintuitive. And, you know, all these superhero movies, they're not going to encourage people to try and make their own Iron Man army. You want hard science fiction for hard science.
Yes, I think that sums up the thing perfectly from that perspective, really. A science fiction article that was forwarded on in terms of science fiction, why is it important and why? Natasha, why is science fiction important and why do you think it's at risk? I mean, this particular article, as right, says Star Trek, Star Wars, Avatar, the Marvel films, the DC films, none of these in their current incarnations tell stories that could not be told without their science fiction elements. They are, once we strip them of their token tesseracts and transporters, for the most part, fantasy films or action films or westerns in cosplay. A few fantastic exceptions aside, the same is true of television and a large body of literature. All, for the most part, play with tropes and story formats and with social and political values and conventions that do not question the here and now or offer alternatives. Natasha, you were with me on Saturday with Adrian Tarkovsky. Does that resonate, or do you think, well, that would have taken Children of Time out of the Arthur C. Clarke Award?
No, I think that's a load of old twaddle.
It's
interesting you bring up particularly the mention of China, because I remember reading a couple of years ago an article about how they've banned everything to do with time travel. And, Hayley's agreeing with me. She remembers seeing it. Which is quite an interesting concept, considering that obviously sci-fi is becoming a lot bigger now in China. So how they can pull that off with kind of all the other different sort of elements of that is quite interesting. But no, in terms of that, I think sci-fi is very important in lots of ways. Everyone has their own sort of escapism, but I think in some ways it celebrates humanity and a lot of good qualities about it, and it inspires people, and it also brightens people's days, and anything that's going to make people positive, I think, is a good thing.
The author actually said of this particular piece, he was in China in 2007 at the first party-approved science fiction and fantasy convention in Chinese history. And at one point, he took a top official aside and asked him, why? Why had science fiction been disapproved of for a long time? What had changed? Response: the Chinese were brilliant at making things if other people brought them the plans. But they did not innovate and they did not invent. They did not imagine. So they sent a delegation to the United States, to Apple, to Microsoft, to Google, and they asked the people there who were inventing the future about themselves. And they found that all of them had read science fiction when they were boys or girls. Do you still disagree vehemently, Ed, or is the case of... why I order... What?
Okay?
Yeah.
I can't catch that.
Just carry on. It's just one of those scenarios. Well, do you still disagree with the tenor of the piece?
The tone of the piece basically says that hard science fiction for hard science, which I do disagree. I think that there's plenty of place for Star Wars inspires. I mean, Neil Gaiman tells the story, and I think it's mentioned in that article, that he was, you know, wandering around a place in China where they were encouraging people to kind of, you know, embrace Star Wars and Star Trek and all these sort of things. And yes, science fiction does inspire, but it's not like Arthur C. Clarke is hard work. You get into hard science fiction via soft science fiction. And I think there's a whole thing where Doctor Who will encourage you to think about time travel. Time travel will encourage you to think about physics. So there's plenty of space for Doctor Who. You can't just say, oh, well, the time travel in Doctor Who is complete nonsense. Obviously, it doesn't work that way because of, you know, the way that universes are formed. And you're like, well, hang on, at least you're starting to think about the way that universes are formed, which is how we get you. So yes, science and science fiction do walk hand in hand. But there's always been this snobbery. I got my ear clipped by Brian Aldiss a few years ago for calling science fiction sci-fi.
Oh, please, it's a faux pas of the highest magnitude. I mean, Holly, I'm afraid to say, you know, you can't go in saying, you know, it's the SF is an exact abbreviation, but saying sci-fi can offend so many people potentially. Except obviously.
I didn't know this. Why can't you call it sci-fi?
I didn't know this either.
You see, why is this? You see, both Holly and Tessa would have had their respective ears also clipped by the author of Trillion Year Spree, amongst other things, Heliconia Spring, etc., Brian Aldiss, if they'd glibly referred to sci-fi.
Because they pride themselves on the fact that they use the word science and science fiction, and it encourages a scientific thinking. And there's this strange idea that if you call it sci-fi, if you give it a nickname, you're somehow diminishing the science aspect, which I have to say I disagree. I think science fiction can be dealt with fondly and thought of fondly. To take the Marvel movies as an example, the Iron Man armor has encouraged so many home builds of the Iron Man armor. You can go online and see people like the Hacksmith who are building home solutions. And some of them are very novel and very clever. And that's science and engineering. And you make yourself an absolutely amazing costume that can also throw fireballs, that can actually, gosh, fly. Not very well, but can fly. You know, you can build these crazy, crazy things. And you're inspired by, how did you put it? A Western and cosplay.
Yes, I thought that was a bit harsh, personally. I mean, after all, I've always really had a secret hankering to start a lecture with a full Iron Man outfit and repulsor rays. It could be very important and probably usefully protective as well. Oh, what? Kaylee, any thoughts from your own point of view?
Well, my brother does physics, and whenever I have to watch a science fiction movie with him, he gets really angry that it's not correct.
Oh.
So I feel I can understand.
Very angry.
This probably isn't the same thing, but surely that's like giving people nicknames. Not saying their full name.
The only time I've personally felt offended was when a television continuity announcer referred to a skiffy season that's coming up. I thought, you know, that possibly didn't quite do it for me. You know, a skiffy season, you know. It's BBC as well. What could you expect, you know? Yeah. Well, Forbidden Planet, the latest in a new skiffy season. I don't think so.
Okay.
Never mind.
Okay, maybe then.
Martina, as somebody who's a complete novice to the wonderful world of science fiction, in fact, from the moment you started the show, you were having panic attacks when we said you were speaking to the Ed Fortune. It's
I'm
all right,
still
breathe.
Having panic
still
attacks.
Still having panic attacks. Do you feel that Ed's had sort of calmed you down a little bit with respect to that whole system?
To say, I'm not really a science fiction.
I'm
saying that right.
Yeah.
See, I'm scared.
There's a grand event happening on March the 19th at the University of Lincoln, the Stone Tape Symposium, in which a colleague of Ed Fortune, the wonderful Robin Pierce, will hopefully be there and might also sort of, you know, have his own views. Being that he's normally based in Wales, it's a whole new world entirely. You know? One of these days, we'll get both Robin and Ed in the same room, and it'll be a cosmological giant step forward. One of them that could actually manifest as the latest Doctor Who. Ollie, finally, from your point of view, as a filmmaker, ever been tempted to actually say, yeah, I fancy doing a SF movie?
Yeah, Why not? Why I mean, not? I really want to make a virtual reality film. So, I mean, I'd have to incorporate science fiction, wouldn't I? Because the VR is, for me, science fiction.
Take that Oculus Rift adrift scenario. Very good. You could write the story, Ed. Over to you.
I think a really good low-budget sci-fi, actually, 2000 AD is 40 today.
I know.
And 2000 AD is famous for Future Shocks, which are four-page stories of science fiction. And the number of kind of short but sweet science fiction, low-budget science fiction films I've seen recently, which are essentially, you know, Future Shocks. You know, they're all living in a machine. They're all secretly robots. He you know, takes his hairpiece off and there's batteries underneath and these little tiny, short but sweet science fiction ideas. You don't need a massive budget to tell sci-fi stories on film. You just need good imagination and a good premise, and the natural world is full of good premises, which is, you know, science. You steal ideas from science and you turn them into fiction, hence the clues in the name.
In so many ways, we could say Borag Thong, we could say Splendig Verthrig, we could say other things, but I can see the Midwick Driver, it's a little bit confused about those kind of expostulations I've been giving there. Splendig Verthrig, thrill power, maximum thrill power. 40 years ago, 2000 AD, Comic Magazine was launched upon the planet. It gave the world Judge Dredd. It gave the man activated by compupuncture hyperpower, Mach 1. It gave Flesh. It gave Future Shock, etc. It is now celebrating 40 English terrestrial years of existence. So the line that Ed was saying there wasn't simply a case of, oh, here's another one of those fine lead writers for Starburst Magazine playing around with time, saying 2000 AD 40. What does that mean? It means the comic magazine 2000 AD is 40 years of age young today.
Happy birthday.
Exactly. Sorry, I just wanted to set the scene on that one, Ed, because I could appreciate it. Were you around for the first official edition?
I was quite young when the first one ever came out. I was quite young when the first Star Wars movie came out. I was quite young when the first Star Wars magazine came out. Mm. And they all came out in the same year, which is 40 years ago.
Exactly. So, back in the 25th anniversary of 2000 AD, writer John Wagner was recalling in the weekly real-time series how he came up with the comic's ruthless lawman, Judge Dredd. He is the law. That's the important thing. So, Judge Dredd to Doctor Who. Should we have Sylvester Stallone as the next incumbent of the TARDIS? See what I did there, Ed? You know, a seamless scenario there to actually say, let's think out of the box. Like, we've had Peter Capaldi. Let's go for Sylvester Stallone. Or, as Natasha suggested, if that fails, why not one of Mel and Sue?
I read an article, actually, the other day. And it suggested there's a big petition about having Tilda Swinton.
Swinton. Tilda Swinton, marvellous.
Because she is tall and fey and strange and androgynous. Yeah. But then if you want to have that kind of weirdness, maybe Margolis is also crazy and weird and odd. Mm. Could you imagine her running around the TARDIS in a kind of crazy grandmother sort of way? Mm. I mean, it would probably kill the ratings, to be honest, after the first episode. But it would be marvellous. I would watch every single minute of that.
Well, let's face it, surely the barrier was actually set purely and simply by the incarnation of John Hurt, the late John Hurt, as the War Doctor. Surely, you know, on that sort of basis, you know, you could actually go for a one-off Miriam Margolyes special where flatulence would rule in the TARDIS.
That would be an amazing Christmas special. And I don't see any problem why we shouldn't have a one-off, so, you know, now that we've got that, providing we don't do it too often, I don't see why they can't. I want it someone I've not heard of. I always do. I always say this with Doctor Who. I want it to be someone I've not heard of. When I think of Doctor Who casting, I want to cast other characters and as other actors. I'd quite like to see Sean Maguire as the Dalek Hunter Absalom Dark. I think he would be fantastic. Because he's got a kind of bluntness to him that would work quite well. I know many, many people who would like to see Sean Pertwee as any possible Doctor Who role, including the Doctor himself. It's a show with infinite possibilities. let's not limit it to just who will be the next Doctor. We can have, you know, we can have a Penguin as a companion if we really
want. Frobisher, of course, set the mark for that and did it extremely well. But let's find out the Midrick Drive-Out view on this particular one. Even though our regular Harry Potter has gone AWOL, where is Anna Brown these days?
I think she's got quite a bit of work to do. She needs to do her food shopping. She's got nothing in her cupboard. She's been quite busy just lately, so...
Messages there. However, yeah. Natasha, next Doctor. Any thoughts, or do you think, I frankly don't care?
I'd like to see them do something kind of different with the role with what they've currently been doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would
Emma
make
Tinsel,
me watch
possibly?
It again.
Emma
well,
is the Doctor.
Well, I think she'd be fabulous.
I mean, she's met Ed Fortune, so that's a possibility. She's sandwiched between Annette Andre and Ed Fortune. She's on regular Midweek Drive-Out.
She's practically royalty.
Flips pancakes for Woking TV. Okay, Holly?
I love the idea of Tilda Swine or
Swinton.
Yeah. Swinton being it. Although, like, Doctor Who has got quite a quirky humour. I don't know if she'd be able to pull that off, but then she could be a new identity, obviously. Bring new characteristics. So,
Okay. Kaylee?
I would love to see a female Doctor.
I think it's bound to happen. Obviously, we've had a female mistress. So Michelle Gomez has set the routine from that perspective. So whether it's a step too far this time, whether she should actually have a bridging scenario by actually having Idris Elba as a Doctor, I don't know. It's just a thought there. Maybe a transgendered Idris Elba.
He might be James Bond, though. So that'll be confusing.
These are the kind of things that just cause so many challenges. It's just untrue. Martina, don't care, really.
I don't care.
Honest answer, as we expected, no less. Tessa?
I'd say surprise me, but you mentioned...
You might well have said that. And the Facebook things too. My word, surprise me. Bush.
No, I was going to say, you mentioned Sylvester Stallone. Mm. I don't know. I couldn't see him as Doctor
Really?
Who. No, not at all.
Well,
I think he'd be terrible in more genre roles. I mean, if you imagine him as Judge Dredd.
He had his moments, so did Carl Urban. But never mind, you know, that's another lie entirely. Almost finally, Natasha, you may recall I did actually cite Ed Fortune's name in vain on Saturday night at Linden Books when I said that he was one of the key people behind, obviously, the award of Adrian Tchaikovsky as Children of Time.
Yes.
Key person. So, yeah. Just because Ed's not necessarily physically present on the phone doesn't mean I don't regularly sort of cite his name there. So I hope your ears were burning at around about, 7:30 on Saturday
evening.
That's exceptionally kind of you, right? You know, to be honest. Adrian's book is so good, it would have sold itself out regardless.
Well, Natasha's got a copy. She's got a copy of Children in Time of Time with a special design as well in it.
Yes.
Did he draw in it for you?
I got a wolf.
He got a wolf. She got a wolf. I don't know.
If you get a chance to read Spiderlight, which is also by Adrian, it's great fun. It's a fantasy novel, but it's fun.
But the good news is, another hard science fiction novel is coming out by Adrian Tchaikovsky for the end of the year.
Yes.
There we are. Anyway, that's brought us round to the last two questions for Ed Fortune. I think it's time, Tessa, as you turned up with, 30 minutes or so to go to wrestle with the chair and so on and so forth, talk to us, more importantly, talk to Ed.
Okay, I am saying goodbye.
I think so. You can say whatever you want, basically, but, it's done up to yourself.
Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us this evening?
I have. It's been a pleasure.
That's brilliant. And will you be joining us again on the show soon?
If you'll have me.
Oh, I think that's absolutely sort of a matter of course, really, from that point of view. We need to actually sort of get more of the Starburst sort of people on board as well. We have to work our way through that. Are you up at Sci-Fi Scarborough, Ed?
I might be. Yeah. I will definitely be at Sci-Fi Weekender in Wales, where I will be interviewing some Doctor Who companions and also watching Redwood, which is Tom Patton's latest movie. Okay. And I'll probably be at EasterCon, and I'll definitely be at WorldCon. And after that, who can say?
Who can say? But that's the uncertainty of life that makes it all the more interesting. Or as Annette's associate, as opposed to friend, actually said, "Gee, honey, you're going to love dying." Don't know what she was actually meaning about that at all, really. It was quite harsh, really.
Oh,
just because she wanted to sort of downsize and go to a library, I suppose. It's very strange.
In every other song that I've heard lately, some fellow gets shot, and his baby and his best friend both die with it, as likely as not. In half of the other songs, some cats cry, are ready to die.
lost most all of our happy people in. I'm wondering why. Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Just think about loving.
Think about loving.
Just think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. Old Marty Robbins down in El Paso a little while back, and now Miss Patty Page, or one of them, is a wearing black. And Kathy's clown has Don and Phil where they feel like a pig good to die. If we keep on losing our singers like that, I'll be the only one you can buy. Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the lovey lovey dovey. Let's forget about the whining and the crying and the shooting and the dying and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life. Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the humping and the bumping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying and the shooting and the dying and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Kind of positive view on the world. Yes, I think we get the message.
To many people, the letters ET signify phoning home, early Drew Barrymore, or cycling over the moon. For midweek drive aficionados, ET will always be the Surrey legend that is Emma Tinson.
Or there's always this one.
This is Rachel Abbott, and when I'm not producing all manner of audio goodness for On Broadcast, I always like to check out the latest news and views of Emma Tinson, Jessica Ward, and other midweek drivettes on the Midweek Drive for Siren FM.
Yeah, you see, we dust them down. We hope they're going to return in some way, shape or form. We look at photographs of them with Annette Andre in the Siren studio. We hear people like Tessa say, goodness, is that Emma? She's got such long hair. You know, it's unbelievable from her. Martina does not even know of whom we're speaking, because they exactly wasn't invited back to talk to the Alumni Association. It's unbelievable, you know, huge omission there. That was when I sort of said step away from that point of view. Natasha, of course, you remember when you first encountered the awesomeness that is the Tinson mistress.
Yes, we went on a news report together.
Together, exactly. Crossed over the Manchester Pennines in the dark, deepest, darkest fog to see Ed Fortune to write her dissertation. Got a first route, of course, on the joys of the science fiction fanatical fandom and reporting of SF fans and so on and so forth. And Kaylee Umfraville and Holly McGrattan, we might be speaking of somebody who's just legendary within the midweek drive, shrugging on the shoulders. Why would you? Media production students disassociate with the whole thing. You know, it's all there. Emma, welcome back to the midweek drive.
Thank you. That was like the longest and most extravagant intro anyone has ever given me. Well, I loved it.
You see, not only can you flip pancakes for Woking TV, not walking, of course, Woking, smoking. Very important. Easily confused, sometimes the entire channel is devoted to Chinese cooking. That would be the Woking channel, as opposed to the Woking channel.
Just imagine very important.
In this particular instance, she goes out and interviews elves and all sorts of other routines and gives film reviews that aren't too dissimilar to Richard Fitzwilliams, but obviously a lot easier on the eye. Loved La La Land. Don't get us started on La La Land. In fact, were she in the studio, she'd probably have a head-to-head battle with Phil Dearness, who was not a La La Land fan.
Would he not? Mm. Well, Phil just enjoys being controversial, doesn't he?
Say no more. I mean, Natasha, would you say that sums up the Dearness Meister? He enjoys being controversial.
I think he's just strong in his beliefs
Beliefs. Yeah.
Well, I always like to hear Phil pronounce the word Surrey, so, you know, that's
Surrey legend. Yeah, you should hear what he says about Stettin in Poland. You know, that's the latest scenario for that point of view. In fact, we might just dig that out once again, because why shouldn't it actually have a secondary? That's what the world says. Which, of course, refers to our latest, not quite the newest, because, as I say, that honour rests with Kaylee Umfraville and Holly McGrattan, jointly, of course, because they made their debut at the same time. And, wonderfully, when I was checking through the archives, because of a slight time difference, Holly wrote back and saying, I presume you mean 5 p.m. as opposed to 5 a.m. Yes, I'd invite you along 5 a.m. in the morning, and Holly's been professional for all this time not to actually alert to the fact that we didn't, in fact, invite you to the studio 5 o'clock in the morning, 5 a.m. as opposed to p.m.
I was a bit worried what I'd got myself into.
It's all the fault, show. All the fault of that Ben Lewis. That's the important thing, and the pre-meetings that actually all fit together on that session. Anyway, Tessa, I'm sure you've got lots of questions to ask Emma, because I know you regularly like and appreciate all the exciting updates that she does in her busy life and so on. So take it away, please,
Tessa. So, Emma, how are you and what have you been up to? I mean, I saw these exciting videos on Facebook, so...
Well, I don't know if they're that exciting. I think you're just being nice. But I'm definitely missing all of you guys in Lincoln. But, yeah, I'm being really, really busy. I'm kind of juggling jobs in the post-university life. So I have a full-time job at a marketing company, and then I do my freelance filming and stuff on the side as well. So I'm constantly busy.
Busy, wow. We know what we've got to look forward to when we finish.
Well, yeah, you've got a year and a half to go yet, really, Tessa. I mean, and also, you know, you have your own Sound and Country Vision show. You've got all the other routines. In case people are wondering, why was Camo from Nashville not live on the show today, and why was it William Coles who effectively was presenting? It was because Camo is hip deep in country music awards and ceremonies and other such matters from that point of view. So we appreciate that's the message. Natasha, given that it's only a matter of weeks now until the dissertation is all wrapped up, sorted, done, and dusted, and you will be joining Emma in the joys of delights and so on. Any questions for yourself?
Yes. In order to distract myself from dissertation, I might make some pancakes for Pancake Day. Have you got any tips? Because I hear you've been flipping some.
Sadly, I have no tips. I'll tell you a little bit of a secret. The video, I don't think the video I did was actually uploaded yet, but we had to do it all in one take because we were in a kitchen. And I had a lovely chef beside me who knew exactly what he was doing. And then while we were filming, he asked me, do you want to have a go at flipping it? And my face kind of went white. And I was like, oh, gosh, this is going to go wrong. But thank goodness it didn't. But no, I don't really... I'm not a masterful chef, to be honest. But flipping it, I would just say go with confidence. That's the way forward.
Not too dissimilar to the William Sitwell advice, which is regularly provided as, you know, at the end of the day, go with confidence. That's the important thing. Confidence. And, you know, have confidence.
And enjoy yourself. That's the main thing.
And enjoy yourself. It's just wonderful. For a moment, I thought Emma Louise Timpson was actually coming up on Facebook, but then it vanished, and so the links were broken, so I don't know what's... It's Mr. Computer effectively causing all matter.
Oh, no.
We could have described... or don't worry, Emma. It's probably a Lincoln sort of bias that's coming through within that. So Sarah Bullimore was looking for a few extra committee members to join the development of New York Book Festival, also known as Books in the Castle. So there we are. It's great stuff there. So, Emma, have you got any questions you want us to put to Phil Leonis, which might be predicated by listening to his particular trailer for Martina?
Stettin in Poland has finally bloomed on the midweek drive, all thanks to the international skill set of our newest midweek drivette, Martina Viaka. Oh, sure, I'm American. Give me all the challenging pronunciations.
So there we have it, Emma. I mean, I don't know whether you saw it was in the Entertainment Tonight scenario. I mean, it was a self-created scenario. Were you proud of Phil for actually ensuring that even the former Iron Curtain country, Poland, now it's thrown off its shackles and so on, can still be represented solidly by a lass who's actually living in Bury St Edmunds?
Oh, well, Phil's an absolute star. I think the one thing I would like to ask him tonight, on the theme of NASA making a big announcement today, is does he believe in life beyond our solar system? That's my big question for Phil.
It's a key one. Emma Louise Timpson shared Woking Shopping's video, Happy Valentine's. I don't know what she's actually doing with that shopkeeper, but it certainly looks as though he's quite interested, particularly the way he's clutching his card right in front of his particular... No, I won't even go there. It's strange and bizarre. So, but you see, he's back there, obviously a protective gesture, I feel, because you don't want to mess. You don't want to mess with E.T., not when she's in full broadcast journalism mode.
Indeed.
Critical stuff there. As Richard Fitzwilliams also found. And the other thing, whilst we're actually doing admissions, Emma, very polite, didn't acknowledge that the calendar I sent her last year, which, of course, you got your own calendar
as well.
And Natasha, you got yours.
Yeah.
And actually sent it with postage to be paid, so she actually ended up, she had to end up paying about £1.50. You know, what can I say? The rule,
that's
obviously,
right. I can forgive you.
Yeah, I figured, you know, this was the reason she said, no, I can't come to this. And so, she had to pay postage. You just hate it when that happens. Still, moral of the story
is. It's all right, because I loved the calendar so much, and it's got so many great photos and memories in it, so it's lovely.
There we are. And let's hope those are just the beginning of a whole new wonderful world. Holly, would you like to put those last two questions to Emma Tinson? Because I think it's the first time you've actually encountered the awesomeness that is E.T. on the Midweek Drive.
That's true. I have two questions and a challenge.
Nice.
I'll do the challenge first.
Very good.
Would you flip a pancake in a wok?
Nice.
Do you think that would even work?
Yeah, the
on
I think that
TV.
Would be better, actually, because a wok's bigger, isn't it? I reckon that'd be good.
The batter might stick to the raised edges, not sure.
True. Not sure.
Anyway, have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
I have indeed, thank you.
And will we be hearing from you sometime soon?
Oh, I do hope so, because I've missed it.
Let's have a round of applause for Emma Tinson. Back on the Midweek Drive, splendid stuff, and now originally dedicated to Michael Flynn, formerly, of course, of the Donald Trump administration, Val Doonigan, Little Bridget Flynn.
I've an isolated house, I've a cow or two at grass, a plant garden running by the door. I've a shelter for the hens and a stable for the ass, and what could a man want more? Maybe so, I dunno, for a bachelor is easy and is free. And I've lots to look after and I'm living all alone, but there's no one looking after me. Now me father often told me I should go and have a try to get a girl that owns a bit of land. And I know the way he says it, sure there's someone in his eye, and me mother has the whole thing planned. Maybe so, I dunno, what would mellify them greatly to agree. But there's little Bridget Flynn, and it's her I want to win, but she never throws her eye on me. Now there's a little girl who is worth the weight in gold, and that's a decent dowry, don't you see? So I think I'll go and ask her just as soon as I get bold, if she'll come and have a night to me. Will she go? I don't know, but I'd love to have her sitting on me knee, and I'd sing like a thrush on a hawthorn bush, if she'd come and have a night to me.
Yay! Just got another Adrian online, Adrian Wrigglesford, who's offering us the opportunity to feature a fanzine editor for Doctor Who called Whop Whop on the whole thing. Whop Whop. There are some times in the wonderful world of media, community or otherwise, where I just think, we're just too kind. Lily Holliman can never be too kind, because not only is she the chairperson extraordinaire of the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, but quite frankly, as she said 12 hours ago, there's nothing wrong with a grown woman gallivanting alone at a theme park all afternoon. Of course there isn't, Lily. You know, it's a classical line on that perspective. So, yeah, exactly. You know, just celebrates that in herself. It's just what it's all about. You know, as Linda Van Marlen said, love the pick, Basil Hoffman, fun. Isabel Siegfried, or Isola Siegfried. Sounds vaguely Teutonic, doesn't it, really? Hey, if I live closer, I'd be doing the same thing. Definitely nothing wrong there. Tessa, you were very excited by this.
Yeah, I would too. I love the Minions as well. I actually saw the photo earlier. Yeah. On social media, I think it's brilliant. Are you a Despicable Me fan?
You know what? I've actually never even seen the movie.
call the press. Los Angeles Breakfast Club person has not seen Despicable Me.
I'm convinced they're still, you know, Twinkies, anthropomorphized Twinkies.
Oh,
but yeah. I do want to see. the movies.
Yeah.
Found them very cute.
Well.
Yeah, you'll have to when you get time. They are really good films.
I think in many ways you could actually have a sandwich of the Lady Killers. You could have Despicable Me, Lady Killers, and then the Minions. That would kind of work. You know, that would be a concept that would actually be around that.
Definitely.
You may, if you're a discerning listener, have appreciated that we ended Emma Tinson's slot with her question for Phil Learness.
Yes.
And what do we get? We get Lily Holloman, proof that there is extraterrestrial intelligence at work in the cosmos by coming and welcoming us to the Hall production. As we said, is he on there? Is he not there? So it's all a very strange world. I wonder, Natasha, has Lily been too busy with the Los Angeles Breakfast Club to listen to any of the show today? What do you think? What's your estimate?
I think she'll have listened.
Do you think
I
she'll think have caught a bit of it?
Yeah. I have faith in
Emma Tinson and Annette Andre. Annette, of course, who is still awaiting the question from Phil Learness that he constantly says, I've got a question for Annette. Never tell me what it is. I can't really deliver the question if Phil Learness doesn't actually tell me what it is he wants to find out. It's a message, Lily, you might like to relay to Phil, really, from that point of view. We can't ask the question unless he says what it is. But what do you think, Martina? Do you think she's been listening to the show or far too busy playing with the Minions?
I don't know. I hope she did.
Yeah, I know. But there's always a podcast.
I am shocked. I
love Minions so much. How could you not watch them?
Lily, you have moved from being like the number one go-to Californian correspondent to, but she does never seen the Minions. It's like suddenly.
I rode the Minions ride. Doesn't that count for something?
No.
It counts a little bit, I guess.
The little Minion bugs that fly in the air, and I flew with them yesterday.
Okay, let's say you're halfway there. Yeah.
I feel like she's met them. It's closer, you know, we've seen them on film, but we haven't got to see
them. So she has actually sort of met, so in terms of engaging.
Engaging, yes, exactly.
Kaylee, you're keeping very quiet. I mean, is this something where in Vermont your mother would actually say, Minions, what are they?
She loves the Despicable Me movies, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
But I haven't seen the Minions movie.
No.
Right.
Yeah,
I've seen the Minions.
And Holly?
I think Despicable Me is annoyingly funny. I don't know, something about, it's just childish, but then I think it's brilliant. And my mum watched it the other day and she just quoted it for weeks. It was really weird, but I got it, yeah.
It's a message.
Well, you guys have to come to Hollywood and go to the Minion World at Universal. And also the Harry Potter world. I know yours is probably far superior in England. But
just because we invented it doesn't mean to say it's going to be superior. I mean, look at what else we've invented in England, which needed American exploit and money to actually make it good at all. You know, it's amazing. You know? It's a clear system on that basis. I've got to ask the question, though. In terms of last week, obviously, Sam Stone and David J. Howe were in Los Angeles. Did they meet up with your good self? Did they live up?
We had so much fun. They came to the Los Angeles Breakfast Club, and they enjoyed it very thoroughly, according to them. And then we took them on a tour of the Los Feliz neighborhood and showed them all kind of the hidden gems of the neighborhood, including a Walt Disney sites tour, the site of Walt Disney's original studio and two of his original studios, his original little tiny storefront studio and then his original big studio and the houses where his animators live, which look exactly like the house where the Seven Dwarves live, because the animators modeled the house where the Seven Dwarves live in Snow White after their quarters in Los Angeles. So that's something to look forward to when you come to L.A.
Well, you say that, but I mean, the fact of the matter is, with the current administration being what it is there, we might go, we may never go out again, there's a whole range of issues from that perspective. It's just, you know, I mean, Natasha, I mean, you were over, not in LA, admittedly, but you're over in Houston, I believe,
yes,
over the Christmas period. I mean, did you get a sense you even wanted to return?
To be honest, I was a bit unsure on what to expect. Yeah. And, it completely actually exceeded my expectations. And I survived. I'm back and no one arrested me at immigration, which is always pleasant. So,
it's always a plus.
Tessa, when was the last time you were over? When were you over in Vegas?
Oh, that was last New Year's Eve.
Oh, right.
So, just over a year ago now.
I mean, obviously we had a different presidency there. We had all kinds of other sort of systems on that basis. Was it something that you kind of feel, yes, I'm going to return. I somehow feel drawn to America.
Well, I was a little bit anxious at first because I'm not sure whether there were some things going on at the time, but I got back all good and well, and I had a brilliant time. So I think sometimes you just have to kind of keep going and live on, really.
Feel the fear. And do it anyway. good. So, moving on then. Martina, any questions for Lily Holliman? As clearly, Phil's just given up on any connection whatsoever. It's all right. We much appreciate having Lily in there, and I'll dig out her jingle as well. So go for it.
Well, Phil has actually descended upon the telephone.
Has he?
I can answer something quickly, and then
go on. Quick question for Lily before the awesomeness that is Phil Leonis has the last few moments.
What was the Minion ride like?
Well, it was actually exactly like the flying elephants at Disneyland, but with little Minion insects and a little Minion in the center kind of guiding the whole thing.
Oh, that sounds great.
It's very cute.
Yeah.
And there's a giant Minion kind of crawling up the building that you can see from the freeway.
Minions everywhere.
And that's how Donald Trump was elected president of the United States.
Exactly.
A rich scenario which proves that when push comes to shove, the American citizen have got their finger on the political pulse. Let's elect a Minion, or if that fails, let's go for Donald Trump. And so it goes.
Speaking of Minions, here is the one and only Mr.
Oh, my word. Well, Lily, you've got to ask the last two questions because otherwise it would not be a complete sort of segment. So, Kaylee, would you like to ask Lily, in your capacity as being half American, what a full American would actually respond to these last two questions? Go, please.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Very much so. I have been shamed into watching Despicable Me, all of them. So, thank you, and ta-ta for now.
She may return, she may not. She's a bit to it. Yeah. We were talking about Sylvester Stallone and Johnny Depp earlier. Same thing, well, you know, in many ways. I would say Lily Holliman is the female equivalent to a combination of both Johnny Depp and Sylvester Stallone, which means she'd make an ideal doctor. Or would that be Phil Leonis? Good evening, or even good morning in LA time, Phil Leonis.
You sound like you need a doctor. Oh,
it's all right, Phil. It's all in the mind. That's the important thing. One doesn't really exist.
Is that why we've postponed our discussion of the searchers till
Actually, we might have to postpone again. It may well be the week after. It's just things are emerging in all sorts of ways, so that may well be the day, Phil. It's
so exciting. So very exciting. Yeah, just keep me wanting more. You know, before Lily Holliman gets to watching the Despicable Me movies, and you know, she said that our Harry Potter world, I guess, is probably not too shabby. I think she's underestimating us. I think we're extremely shabby. But where was I going with this? You know, before she gets to the Despicable Me movies, this year is the 50th anniversary of the seminal entertainment program The Prisoner from Your Fair Shores. Sight and Sound magazine once called it the most intelligent, thought-provoking entertainment series ever created, and I think they are underplaying its brilliance and its importance. And Dean Haglund and I are doing a special episode of our podcast, Chilpack Hollywood Hour, I think a fortnight from now, about the 50th anniversary with special guests. But Lily Holliman is going to start watching the series, and she and I are going to do a week-by-week episode recap of all 17 Prisoner episodes. Won't that be exciting?
For those people, and that might include Tessa, Martina, Kaylee, Holly, and Natasha, who aren't familiar with this, here's a little 60-second recap.
No,
not a number. He's a free man. He will not be stamped, briefed, indexed, or filed.
And those weren't... That wasn't 60 seconds, Alex. That was the longest 60 seconds of anyone's life. Because that was not a recap, by the way. That's a bit of music. That literally was not a recap at all of the show. That's a bit of remixed music from the 1980s that had nothing to do with the show. So please, ladies, don't use that nonsense to judge the show from the 1960s.
We thoroughly enjoyed that. I thought it was part of the show.
The height of the spy craze when Patrick McGoohan, not only the most brilliant, but at that point the highest paid actor in the world, who had turned down the role of James Bond twice and yet became famous for playing a version of James Bond on television in Secret Agent, when
Danger
he created,
Man, please,
co-created, and starred in this series. And it's terrific. It holds up. It is everything that entertainment ought to be, and it explores all the great themes of the individual versus society and individual liberties and responsibilities, and it's super fun, and it's allegory. What more could anyone want?
Well, if you're Annette Andre, you could actually do with a decent attitude from Patrick McGoohan, but I won't go there because you obviously...
No, wait a minute. She speaks very highly of Patrick. Come on now.
Let's progress.
And by the way, Annette Andre, that's the thing, is Annette Andre is in this series, and oh my goodness, is she so good in the show.
Anyway, whilst we're talking about musical themes, and obviously Phil is one of those pedants who prefers to actually have the original and best theme, well, I prefer it's not Secret Agent, it's as we refer to it in Britain as Danger Man. Every government has its Secret Service agent. France, Deuxième Bureau, America's CIA. Messy job? That's when they call on me. Oh, yes.
But that's not the theme song. That's not the theme song to Danger Man. High Wire by Edwin Astley was the theme.
No. This is the Danger Man theme. You might have had a different scenario.
No. It is not.
Listen.
I have the full box set over here. High Wire is what they used as the theme song.
We might play that for you next week, Phil. Eclectic Pulse comes up at 7 o'clock. We still haven't found a response to whether Phil has even heard Emma Tenson's question.
Oh, yes, no.
Was the question?
She obviously hasn't.
He hasn't.
Clearly, you know, you set this whole
thing... But no, I'm not answering whether or not I've heard it. I'm asking what the question was.
Tessa.
I believe it was. Do you believe there... Was it life after the solar system, or...?
Another life,
yes.
Another life.
Beyond
Danger Man,
yeah,
beyond
1980s.
You're not asking me about reincarnation, you're asking me about extraterrestrial life.
Yes. That's
not
correct.
Us, it was Emma Tenson.
It was E.T. Emma's intrigued to know what your thoughts are. Whether you believe.
I think it's, we mathematics shows us that the probability, the likelihood of Earth-like planets, let's just talk about life that would be similar to ours, carbon-based life, the probability of Earth-like planets similar to our own existing or having existed in other parts of the universe, where there are millions of galaxies that we have been able to record, galaxies, never mind solar systems, is it's so high. There are millions of planets like ours. So it just seems to me nonsense to think that there has not been other life elsewhere in the universe. I think we might even find life of different types in this solar system. But, of course, the question is whether there still is. Because, of course, the light traveling to us, we are in a young part of the universe. And, yes, we may be approaching middle age, and maybe we could use a nip here and a tuck here, but we're still relatively young compared to other parts of the universe, and it is entirely possible that civilizations have risen and fallen and gone into the non-corporeal ether, long before now. So as to whether there are others out there now... I don't know if we would ever be able to find out. But the other answer to the question, and this is a question that I get a lot in one form or another whenever, especially I was showing The Truth Is Out There, and people would push me on what I believe, what I think. And I generally think that what I believe is not that interesting. But when push came to shove about things like UFO and extraterrestrials, my real answer generally is along the lines of, I don't care. I don't care. I don't even find it to be an interesting question. I have enough on my hands trying to be a decent friend, a decent boyfriend, a responsible citizen on planet Earth. I have so much on my plate just trying to become a better human being that whatever is out there in the universe is pretty much on its own to take care of itself.
And there we have it. We've just actually had a message from our Facebook, one of our Facebook correspondents. Phil, do you know who that might be?
Well, I mean, there's really only one. There is Penny Evans, and then there's all the others.
Well, I'm sorry, but here's a clue.
Katie Grimason.
There we are.
She's not a Facebook correspondent. She's an honorary chairman of the midweek, chairperson of the midweek drive-ads.
Her official line is, I'm listening, say hi to Phil for me. Phil says nothing in response.
Duly delivered.
Exactly.
And duly noted.
Fantastic.
And, this is...
It's taken the place of asking for a number between 2 and 26 that Katie Grimason has just snuck in there for our universal thought. Thanks to William Coles for being Camo from Nashville this week. Anna Lewis for telling us all about that fast food store and the fact that other fast food stores in Jersey actually employ bouncers. Amazing. Thanks to Dr. Ava Easton for informing us about National Encephalitis Day, actually. If we were sort of spot on from that point of view, I think yes, encephalitis, in which we've had Blackpool Tower, Trafalgar Square, Niagara Falls all going red today, with links in the USA and Canada to raise awareness of encephalitis. And thanks to Emma Tinson, Ed Fortune, Annette Andre, Lily Holliman, and Phil Leonis. Last two questions for Phil, please. Tessa?
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
I've had a wonderful time.
Even though it's short and sweet. And will you be joining us again on the show soon?
Of course, I'll be back next week.
That's it then. That's thanks to Holly McGrattan, Kaylee Umphreville, Natasha Armstrong, Tessa Snart, Martina Vieca, and you, dear listener, for simply being there. As we said, coming up on Siren, we've got Eclectic Pulse with all sorts of marvellous things there. Can we all say farewell, happy trails, or just bye-bye?